So we continue now with this journey backwards through ordinary dependent arising. The ordinary one meaning the one that's meant to describe the conditions that lead to suffering. It's not meant to describe everything about human beings, all situations, but those that lead to suffering. And the journey through liberative dependent arising, which are the conditions that lead to liberation. It is noteworthy that the one that leads to suffering describes actions that the mind makes. So like craving or often the next one, vedana sometimes is clinging or grasping, as I said, or compulsion, becoming, the constructing activities. And that the liberative chain list doesn't really describe actions, but describes states, mental states that we have, the conditions that support it. And it's kind of noteworthy that we get in trouble in terms of suffering, partly through the actions that we do. And liberation certainly requires some actions, but it's primarily described by not by what we do, but the conditions that are in place. And the actions that we do on the path to liberation is not so much to cause something to happen, but to do the things that create the conditions. These conditions to arise, to be there and support us. So going through this, I take it as a sacred journey, as a pointing to one of the most important things of any human being, and that is the quality of their inner life. And the Buddha knew the quality of his inner life intimately and knew how thoroughly it's possible to do the house cleaning of this inner life and experience a unparalleled degree of well-being, of happiness, of freedom. And because he knew it for himself, then he knew what was possible for other people, for us. And he went about teaching it. And so this wonderful journey can seem kind of complicated, all these steps. Buddhism is complicated enough, sophisticated enough, that you could spend decades, lifetimes reading all the suttas and sutras. You could go and get a PhD in Buddhist studies and really get into it. But it really comes down to something very, very simple. The core insight, the core understanding, the very basis of it, upon which all else is built, is based on something very, very so simple. And I don't want to belittle it or make it silly, but to emphasize how simple and experiential it is. It's not a belief, but something we experience. It's all of this path of Buddhism is based on understanding for oneself that which leads to ouch, and that which leads to ouch and ah. And perhaps one day someone will write a whole dissertation justifying that. But I hope it's not one of you, because it's better for everyone for you to understand the simple thing, ouch and ah, and live accordingly based on that. You don't need justification for taking your hand off the hot stove. And so the next step in this dependent arising is kind of directly related to this. And it's I'd like to highlight that these two lists, they really correspond well at this point. So the ordinary dependent arising of suffering, the condition for the arising of craving or thirst is called feeling tones, vedana, which in Pali is sukha, dukkha, and then both sukha and dukkha. And I say the Pali because you'll hear something now when the next one on the liberative dependent arising, after tranquility, is sukha. These two line up very nicely next to each other. Generally, translators will translate sukha differently in these two contexts, but they're both factors. And they're both very fundamental to human life. So maybe it's better not to have a real word for them, but something that kind of has almost like a experiential, awakens some experiential reference point in each of us, maybe. In ordinary dependent arising as vedana, it's translated as often as pleasant, pleasure. So it's pleasure and pain, and both pleasure and pain, or neither pleasure and pain, I guess. That's neither. So kind of neutral. In the liberative, it's just sukha. And that's translated usually as happiness. Sometimes you see the word bliss. I often like to translate it as well-being, because well-being has a kind of a broader relevance in our lives, and feels more, for me, more embodied and rooted in us. Less conditional, almost. And Buddhism is based on the ability for human beings to recognize for themselves what is painful and what is not. What is suffering and what is happiness? And this is not a unique thing that the Buddha does to base his kind of whole orientation around. This is commonly done by philosophers, kind of, or great kind of spiritual thinkers down through the ages, who are not theistic. Some of the ancient Greek philosophers did this. the ones who didn't believe in the, or have any role for the gods. Some of the philosophers of and thinkers of coming out of Europe and foundational for modern thinking, who were in the theistic times, were not theists, called upon our ability to see the difference between pleasure and pain as an organizing principle for directing, guiding our lives, finding our way. More recently, Freud has had his pleasure principle. So this is actually a well-known kind of tendency among human beings to orient oneself to the fundamental nature of pain, suffering, happiness, pleasure. In this karmic path of the path to suffering, to make this teaching a little more complicated, if I may, that if what we do, our actions of mind, body, and speech, if what we do is in any kind of way fueled by or motivated by something that in and of itself has an ouch in it, it will produce more ouch. And if something is motivated or fueled by something that has no ouch in it whatsoever, but has an awe in it, then it leads to more awe. So craving, as I said yesterday, at least it's understood this way in Buddhism, maybe you're the one exception. Craving always has an ouch in it. And I think the reason for that is that you can be sure about it, is that craving itself is a kind of contraction, a kind of tension, a kind of pressure that feels uncomfortable if you really feel it. And as we go, and whatever starts that way will produce more of the same as it goes up the chain, the steps, dependent arising, culminating in grief, lamentation, pain, despair, and anguish. Not that it's always that dramatic. So this is the basic fundamental principle of karma. That's often called karma principle. Right? What's done based on ouch produces more ouch somewhere along the line. What's done with an ah produces more of that. Now what's so remarkable is that as craving begins, this movement of wanting, strong wanting, that becomes compulsion, compulsive enough that leads us to start constructing our way of being in the world, our identity, strong enough that we begin becoming embodied into it as an identity, as a fixed attachment. It can be so compelling and have so much authority that we lose sight of all the ouches along the way. It's kind of like the ouch quality of it is camouflaged by the intense interest in doing something or responding or reacting or judging or believing something. Or even if the ouch is not hidden and we know it, we don't give it enough attention as something that's conditioned, as something which is provisional, something temporary, something impermanent, because of the focus on the beliefs or the desires or the aversions, the objects. And people can get lost in that world. And in a sense, then we lose touch with the ability to be the custodian of our own inner life. And so there's this kind of call, a radical call, difficult call, to pay careful attention to this ouch factor. And in particular, the ouches that are the beginning of this karmic stream. So before we say anything, what's motivating what we say? What's fueling it? And if there's an ouch, maybe it's better to not speak. If we're going to act, do something, and there's an ouch, maybe it's better not to act that way. And then the most difficult one is if we're going to think motivated by an ouch, maybe we're better off not thinking that. Because even thinking ouches produces more ouches. And then we have on the other side, we have the dharmic path that involves these conditions. And there we have sukha, we have an ah. And this awe, as it is with tranquility, as it is with all these steps in the liberative defended arising, are ehi pasiko, the Pali word meaning come and see. There is found in our whole system, psychophysical system, an invitation and a welcome. Come here. Come to the living Dharma that's within you. There's a compulsion based on fear, desire, anger, all kinds of things, to get swept into the world of ouch. But there's a very deep, very way in which there's a calling towards the ah. And to feel that calling, to feel that draw, that invitation, it's not easy, but as we practice, at some point, you might be feeling that. And, oh, the onward leading call here. And if you want to kind of, which I kind of sometimes like to do, a rational, demythologized explanation of how this calling works, this invitation. relying on a myth to do so. Can't get away from these things. Sisyphus kept pushing that big boulder up the hill, up the mountain. What the boulder was asking, boulder was saying, please, let me roll downhill. And the more he pushed up the hill, the more the gravity was wanting to pull it the other way. If he would just get out of the way, the boulder would roll downhill. In us, it's actually work. We're actually working hard, believe it or not, to suffer. I said that there in the suffering dependent arising, there are these actions that are described, like craving and clinging, becoming. Those are work. It takes effort, expending brain power. Clinging and tension is a lot of work. And some of us are pushing our boulder up the hill all the time. And occasionally, we put these boulders down and everything goes back to gravity and comes to rest at the bottom of the hill. And then we go out into the world and we pick up the boulders again. We get tense. And so this calling to freedom is nothing more than feeling the weariness, the effort of keeping the boulder pushing the boulder. And we can feel sometimes, you know, if we really pay attention carefully, that our whole psychophysical system is asking us, please, I'd like a break. I'd like to pause. I'd like not to do all this work all the time. So then is the direction we're going is to become couch potatoes, to do nothing at all, because that's anything we do is work. Not at all. What the calling is not to do this ouch work, not to keep contributing to our own ouch, and not to be pushing our boulder all the time. And whether all of your suffering is because of the way you push your boulder, I'm not going to answer that question. What this path is about is taking responsibility for the boulders you do push. At least do that. And then I evoked at the beginning of the talk the sacredness of this. You're important. Your inner life is so valuable. And to hear the call to put down the boulders. And so this sukha. So I said this morning, I think, that tranquility invites you into itself. Same is true for this sukha, happiness, well-being. Not always easy to detect, but it's there, welcoming you. An important Buddhist monk in China, very famous teacher, wrote a big, fat, humongous book on Buddhist teachings. deep in this book, he summarized all of Buddha's teachings in a simple sentence. Awakening beckons us within everything. Awakening beckons us. Maybe it's his way of saying, Ehi Pasuko, come and see. So if we can only put down enough of our boulders, some of us, Sisyphus had it easy compared to some of us. He only had one boulder. Some of us are juggling our boulders up the hill. Maybe we're probably most successful is to line them up one on top of the other up the hill so you can push them all at the same time. Otherwise, you have to run back and forth before one of them, starts rolling too fast down and So in the liberative, this description is offered just the conditions. And it's kind of like the ball begins to roll downhill, but we can support that. We can help get out of the way. And so a lot of us are just getting out of our own way and allowing these things to be there and knowing what to allow for faith, to allow for gladness, for joy, for tranquility, for happiness. But you can also do more, since these are conditions for the path of liberation. One can be the caretakers of one's faith, inspiration, one's gladness, one's joys, one's tranquility, one's happiness. One can foster those. One can do those things that support those conditions. If you want to have faith in the Dharma, don't spend the day on the shopping channel. There's plenty of things that don't support the presence, the growth of faith. And maybe if you start having some feeling for this path, that you start recognizing that a certain kind of faith, confidence, trust is there welcoming you. It's there inside of you. Faith in this path, faith in this movement, faith in the new paradigm to look at it in a different way. And so this looking at a different way, as we're going backwards in ordinary dependent arising, we get to the Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant or unpleasant. And this is another one of those teachings which can seem very simplistic, reductionalistic, leaving out so much of the richness and fullness and sophistication by which we suffer. How can how can it be so simple? But sometimes simplicity, two things about this simplicity, is that it makes things a lot easier. And sometimes it gets down to the root, to the foundation, the common denominator. So it's a lot easier to navigate at the roots than it is all the branches of a plant. So the way this works, this teaching of Vedana, is that all experiences are characterized by a subjective feeling of either being pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant or unpleasant. Now, all these things that we're feeling have many other feelings associated with them. It's like if you go to the ocean, you put your foot in the water, or you swim in it or something, you might taste the salinity of it. You might feel the currents there, the waves there, the buoyancy there, and all kinds of qualities you might pick up. But you might also pick up the temperature, hot or cold. So all those things are present. But in terms of so Vedana is not supposed to deny that all these other things are there in our experience. But it is supposed to kind of get down to something very basic that can be humbling for many of us to realize that oftentimes are the birth of craving, the birth of this thirst, wanting and not wanting, is nothing more sophisticated than our response to ouch and ah. And even having a PhD in Buddhist studies doesn't mean that such a person, that person's suffering is now super sophisticated with, you know, studying suffering and from suffering for decades. So probably now if they're going to suffer, they really kind of do it well and, you know, in a very educated way with lots of reasons and bringing in the complexity of the human condition in such a dramatic way. And then all the psychology that we've studied and learned, and really kind of can lay it all out there, the full thing. And I don't want to be dismissive of those things. I am a little bit trying to challenge you a little bit, but not dismissive. And challenge you that really that at the bottom, many times the beginning of this process of craving that leads to more complicated things has begun in something so simple as we don't want the ouch, we want the ah. And to realize that can make it so much easier to address it. Maybe you've had been in a situation where some people, after they learn about this, have learned that they're in some kind of complicated, difficult, painful situation. And then it seems very socially complicated what people are doing. And then realize, wait a minute, this is unpleasant. I know how to be with the unpleasant. It's many more things, of course. But if I just see it as unpleasant, it gives me an easier vantage point to not react to it. Because it turns out I'm reacting to the unpleasantness. So like, for example, I was at an airport recently with crowded people in COVID times. There was something unpleasant about the whole thing. And I just stayed in the simplicity of this is unpleasant and did my best navigating it. But I didn't go into political diatribes about how could it be this way. I was able to keep my ease. And so it's this looking at things in a new way begins with suffering at the top. We're no longer looking at the complexity that we add to our suffering and the selfing and the attachments, but just seeing it as painful. And each step along the way, we learn to see differently. Not to deny anything per se, but just to get more and more simple and simple. Before we get distracted by the complexity. Before the complexity obscures how we can care for our own inner well-being. So to just begin to, and then we come to this pleasant, unpleasant, either pleasant or unpleasant. And now we're actually, and as we go backwards in dependent arising, we're actually stepping away from the direct cause and conditions for suffering. That begins with craving. And so if we can kind of see, be present for the raw, basic, simple, pleasant and unpleasantness of our experience before craving arises, then we can maybe just leave it at that and not have craving arise. Or we're in a good vantage point than to see the birth of craving, the beginning of it. It's a lot easier to see it if you first see that this is pleasant, this is unpleasant. And one of the reasons why we're in meditation and retreat is being quiet and slowing down and not having a lot of input and excitement, and but just have it calm and relaxed and settled. And so the mind can get both clear to see, and so we can catch things earlier, and we can see, oh, here's pleasant, this is pleasant. Yep, and here's my desire for it. This is unpleasant. Oh, here comes the usual, you know, behavior I have when things are unpleasant. And we see the beginning of it. And when we see the beginning of it, there's a better chance to not be tricked into it. Oh, okay, there's my old friend, desire, aversion. Thank you. But I think today is not the day I'm going to follow you. I'll just leave you alone. And if we can do that from a vantage point of calmness, tranquility, one of the reasons why tranquility is a condition for happiness is that it's pretty cool. It's pretty kind of awesome, phenomenal, even a little bit exciting, that we can see pleasant or unpleasant arise and even see craving arise, and we say, nope, nope, not today, not this moment. That's pretty cool, especially if we're familiar with what's the alternative that's usually been going on. And there's a kind can be a kind of delight and joy and happiness. Oh, this is, I can do this. I don't know if I can do it all the time, but I just did it. That's nice. And that's a kind of letting go, a kind of not getting involved. And it's very different to prevent something from happening versus just not getting involved in it. You're kind of getting out of the way so it can be there, craving can be there, but it's not going to go very far or do much if we get out of the way for it and leave it alone. And what we want to be very careful with is when we see craving arise, to not add an ouch to that. Like, oh no, certainly I must be a Buddhist failure to have had craving, even though every other human being on the planet has cravings, but somehow I'm wrong if I have it, because Buddha says you're supposed to be free of craving. So all that is ouch, ouch, ouch. What would be ah, ah? What would be the ah response to craving, aversion? What would be the ah response that might actually support that invitation to do it again, to pay attention and be with it, and to really look for this path of freedom? So maybe what encourages the mind to say this is a good thing to do is to have compassion, kindness, care, and love. Or peace and sense of ease with it. Because if we can respond with an ah, then the mind is happy to stay there, come back to it. If we respond with an ouch, of course the mind's going to want to be distracted. So part of it is getting out of the way. In the liberative dependent arising, this getting out of the way is also part of the game, part of it. Because as this invitation to come and see this gravitational force is operating, there starts to be a little momentum in the direction of giving away, giving in to gravity, the pull of gravity. And it begins to snowball if you get out of the way. And for those of you that haven't been in the snow, you can make a snowball and then put it on a steep snow hill, mountain of snow, and let it roll down by itself, and it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger, snowball. So a lot of the practice for the liberative dependent arising is also to get out of the way. Maybe offer support, but let it, you know, this art of not being complicated, not making it, not doing too much, getting out of the way and allowing. And as the practice continues, at some point, maybe not the first day or two or week of a retreat, but at some point, there can be a feeling for how good it is, the awe of getting out of the way, of not picking up, not being against, not interpreting, not making a story. And then slowly we also start learning that some of the stories that seem to have been an ah story, the fantasies, turn out there's a hidden ouch in them. They're not what they're kind of advertised to be. And so there's something called happiness, sukha. As I said, some people call it bliss. I like well-being. Another translation for sukha that's sometimes used that I love is the word ease. E-A-S-E, ease. To have ease, to be easy with things, to ease up, to feel and look for the ease. And maybe this word ease has it's kind of a nice word that contains both some feeling of happiness, some kind of happiness, some kind of peace, some kind of tranquility, maybe even some kind of grace, to have ease. So as you continue practicing, sitting quietly, walking quietly, calmly, there might come a time when it just feels really right to keep it so simple that you are supported by recognizing the simplicity of pleasant and unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, and keeping it that simple, getting out of the way of the craving that might arise, not having craving arise, keep it really simple, just elemental level. And perhaps in doing so, this getting out of the way, you can also begin sensing and feeling the ah of getting out of the way, of non-reacting, of just seeing, just knowing. And perhaps you'll start feeling that ease or that well-being, that happiness of practice. And if it's not happiness and well-being, maybe it's faith and inspiration and a real sense that even though it's difficult, this is the way, this is good to be on this path. So may you be very careful, without being so careful it's ouch. Be very careful that whenever you have a chance, operate from ah and not ouch. Let that be the motivating force, background for how you live your time here at the retreat. But as soon as you're greedy for out, for ah, guess what? It's become ouch. Motivated by ah, that also is getting out of the way, getting yourself out of the way. And what is that? To sit quietly, tranquilly, at this foundational level, what is it? And then to feel the calling. Come here, take a look, take a deeper look. Come, my friend, awakening awaits you. Thank you all very much.